time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Brian Kelly is a goldmine for Notre Dame. Notre Dame fans hate Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly got your program to the level that made them have the power right now that they are set up forever.
SI's Russ Dellinger.
This team and that team want to get to the SEC, want to get to the Big Ten. Why would you do that now?
And SI's Pat Forte.
We're going to throw a pitch down here at the goal line, and we're going to drop it, and we're going to give you that chance, and then we're going to go into a ruinous prevent defense and just let you go bip, 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 bip right down the field.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, heading into week two, and week one was everything we could have hoped it would be. Pretty much.
Yeah. A little bit of a dud Monday nighter, but otherwise, good Lord.
Yeah, we got a maybe quarterback controversy at Clemson. Yeah. That's always fun.
Yep. Yeah.
William Christopher put on the hot seat. The FSU game was absolute mayhem. We'll get to all of that stuff. I just thought there was enough action all over the country, chaos, people feeling good, people feeling bad, that it's sort of the season is starting with a pop.
Yes. It's a reminder of everything that's great about college football, right?
Right. Pretty much that FSU-LSU game where both teams could very easily end up 6-6.
Yeah.
But it was just unbelievable. Yeah. So, but I want to get in before we do that and get to week two. We want to get to the college football playoff expansion. It's literally the biggest thing for the in totality of the sport that has been decided in many, many, many years, even more than the 4-team playoff.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, as we made fun of last time, they released it on a Friday afternoon.
Holiday weekend before week one.
So nobody talked about it.
It's like everybody's heading off to, you know, you're going to the beach, you're going to a, you know, cabin or something, you're going to a happy hour, you're going to a football game. And I was looking up like, what? They did what? Oh, wow. Okay.
Like when?
Yeah.
We don't even know when either.
No.
Mississippi State President Mark Keenum is the hero here for college sports. And it's college sports. It's not just football, because I think this has some wide-ranging implications. But he pushed that thing through, got it done, and everyone's got to get together now Thursday out in Texas. What's that thing? The corn. What do they got?
The jalapeno cream corn.
Absolutely. The jalapeno cream corn. Down at that, what's the name of the
Gaylord
hotel?
The
Gaylord Hotel. Yeah right. And they're going to get their cream corn, and they're going to set this thing out. Can they do it by 2024? I don't know. Can they do it by 2026? Yes, they're going to. So, huge deal is it. Basic parameters, 12 teams, 6 automatic bids, the 6 highest rated conference champions. This is massive. Big 12, Pac-12, your champion is getting in pretty much. As well as ACC and then SEC and Big Ten, they're almost impossible to assume how they wouldn't. Also, huge for the group of 5. Somebody else is getting in with an automatic bid. Your Mountain West, your AAC, your Sun Belt, you have viability. It gives a dream moonshot chance to your Coastal Carolinas and obviously your Boise States and Fresno's and all of those things. The Mac, your great Mac team, whatever. Everyone's got at least a wing and a prayer now. This is the only sport I ever heard of where essentially you started the season saying, I could win every single game and not win the championship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not even play for the championship.
Yeah, not even be considered.
Ask UCF, right? Ask UCF. Heck, go back 15, 18 years, ask Auburn. So it wasn't just group of 5 teams that obviously have been left out, but talking about some major conference teams, it's crazy to actually think about that Auburn team. Somebody undefeated in the SEC was left out of the championship event. It's incredible to think about, but it's exciting. It really is.
Everyone's got a prayer. 6 automatic bids. They will rank them, seed them the same way with the committee. We got to get our committee down there. Got to get our show.
I like how they pointed out in the release of the particulars, right? It's like, we're still doing a committee. We're still doing a show. Just, it's okay. It's not going away. It's not going away. It's okay. It's like, great. Wonderful, you know.
Tuesday night with some overmatched administrator still coming to TVs near you.
Just stupidity.
Explaining why, and it won't even, it matters even less now.
Yes, right. It does, right. Yep.
They're going to get tort. Why the hell is Pitt 8 and Ole Miss 7? That's absolutely ridiculous. Doesn't matter, man. Actually, that one would, because, well, I guess they would both host.
8 and 9.
But 8 and 9, that would matter.
That would matter. That one would matter. Yeah.
That would be the only one. It doesn't matter.
4 and 5 and 8 and 9.
But anyway, these guys love committees. They love having committees. They love sitting. Fine. Have your committee. 12 teams, 1, 2, 3, and 4 have to be conference champions. Notre Dame or any other independent cannot be one of the top 4 seeds. Little clunky, but who cares? They get a bye. 5, 6, 7, and 8 host first round playoff game. Going to be phenomenal. They host 9, 10, 11, and 12. That first weekend will be great. 4 great games on campus. The winners of those then play 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, that, I like this plan. I like 12 better than 16, which I once proposed and was deemed crazy for anything anything more than 2 teams could be in a playoff.
Yes.
It's totally crazy. I could spend this whole podcast reading through quotes that are absolutely bananas. But this is better. First off, there aren't as many good leagues. I think we've discussed that before. There used to be the WAC used to be good. There used to be a lot of good leagues. Now there really aren't. It's barely 5 good ones. But you also avoid the, 8 and 4 Kent State team having to go play Alabama and get just mauled. So your top 4 teams are going to play someone legit in that second round. Second round games are going to be at a bowl site. None of us like that, but again, we can discuss that in a second. I've got some clarity on why. I talked to a whole bunch of people the last 2 days. Clarity on why the bowls survive. And then we play through the bowls. The season's going to get extended deeper into January, which will be tricky because the NFL playoffs always suck up a lot of attention. But I think the college football playoff will create way more interest as this builds through the rounds. And you'll have a neutral site championship game. So final 3 rounds, neutral site. Anything I'm missing here other than multiple TV networks will be on that. That was always the plan. And there's going to be way more money, maybe 1.2 to 1.5 billion. This thing could be worth per year.
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing. It was 600 million right now. So you're talking, 125 to 150%, increase, which will, for major team, if you're the SEC and again, if they do this with like shares,
yeah,
it could be 15, 18 million more per team.
Yeah, and I would expect that.
A lot of money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What am I missing, Ross?
Not much, man. You covered it all. It's, I think the next step, right, is how can this be implemented early? And they'll get started on that, this week. How can you implement in 2024? Or 2025, it's going to be difficult, and they have only themselves to blame, right? Shocking. But in February or last fall, had they made this decision, since it was a proposal introduced 15 months ago, had they made the decision in February or last fall, they would have probably almost certainly been able to expand by 2024, certainly 2025. And now they've wasted basically 6 to 8 months. They've delayed it so much. And now it makes it difficult to implement on that first year. I still think it's doable. I was talking to Bob Bowlesby, former Big 12 commissioner who now is retired and is just shooting from the hip. And he's just like, it's not insurmountable, but it's going to be difficult. And here's why. And tomorrow we'll have a story kind of laying out all the issues that they'll have to kind of resolve. And that starts this week. That starts on Thursday when they meet in Dallas.
Yeah, when they begin the cream corn festival there to figure this out. Yeah, no, I think you covered most of it, Dan. A couple other ancillary benefits of this. People hate when star players opt out of bowl games. I think you're going to see less of that. You got more important games to play. Kenny Pickett would have played in the postseason for Pittsburgh last year as opposed to opting out of the Peach Bowl because Pittsburgh would have been in the playoff. He would have played. Same with Kenneth Walker III if Michigan State had made their the playoff and so on and so forth. I think, I hope, other than Brian Kelly, this would slow down the exodus of coaches bailing on their teams at the end of the season. If you're making the playoff, you're going to stick with that team, right? And so maybe the whole coaching carousel slows down. Maybe this gets to what you have talked about several times, Dan, is pushing back the December signing day. Change the calendar so that everything isn't piling up on top of itself in December and in January and screwing all this up as far as having a good, you know, clean, maximum contested, maximum interest postseason, which, you know, I just think that everything will be amplified towards that and will improve, you know, over this just, you know, hodgepodge of half-assed bowls that surround a four-team playoff. So also, hey, the benefit of getting into a I have hated the conference championship games. I think for the most part, we all have. They really haven't served a very good purpose other than making a lot of money for the conferences. But now, you know, if you're Iowa in that conference championship game last year, win and you're in. I mean, you're going to the playoff. You pull an upset there. That game suddenly, woo, that takes on an added freight.
And so, maybe get a bye.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. So if you've had a disappointing season, but you win your division, or even if we may end up getting rid of divisions. I think we're well on the way towards that happening. But still, if you are an underdog in a conference championship, you got something more to play for than just, oh, well, you know, we're headed to the Alamo Bowl no matter what here. So I hope we don't get trucked. But now, you're playing for a chance to go to the playoffs. So all in all, a wonderful development.
Another,
I think even more, just quickly, Ross, like it increases the interest in other championship games you may not care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
That Pac-12 championship game is not inspired. Like everyone, look, last year, Georgia and Alabama were both getting in. You watch because it was going to be a great game. But in the end, it didn't matter. There was no stakes to it at all because of the way the playoffs set up. You don't even get home field advantage or anything. And they rematch in a month and whatever. But you watch because it was a great game. But how excited were you for a Pac-12 championship game? You know, an AAC championship game. I guess last year there was some interest. But, you know, every championship game now is a play-in game.
Yep.
So you as much as this is a 12-team playoff, this is actually like a 30-team playoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're all playoff games now, right? Go ahead, Ross. They are. It's great. Yeah, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. No, you were getting ready to say something, Ross. Anyway.
Well, I think one of the other benefits of this is the realignment issue. You know, if you are in the Pac-12, say you're Washington or Oregon right now, right? We all know that there's some talk about them going to the Big Ten. You are at the top of your conference, especially, you know, USC leaving, revenue-wise and history of success, you're at the top of your league. And if you win that league, you get an automatic bid into the playoff, probably, almost certainly, unless you have like four or five losses. So why would you go to the Big Ten where you're going to be maybe in the middle of the pack, at best, probably in the middle of the pack? So I wonder if this slows things down a little bit, and also the Pac-12 South, you know, the Arizonas and the Colorados and stuff, Utah's being rumored to go to the Big 12. Why would you leave a league with just 10 members for a league that would be like 14 or one year, maybe 16, eventually 16? You know, why would you leave that? Your chances are greater in making the playoffs. Now, I think the big answer to that is money. You leave for money. But you're going to get more money when you make the playoffs because there's going to be a performance-based revenue distribution. That's going to be a thing, you know, and that's coming. So it's going to be interesting to see how realignment, and even from the Group of Five level, right? I mean, elite, there is an access to them. You know, I think maybe two out of the last 10 years, two Group of Five champions would have gotten in the playoff. over the Pac-12 champion, I think. So there's a path there for you as well now.
Yeah, so I agree with that on a couple fronts. I think this will slow it. Obviously, if you can move to much more money, it's hard to turn down. But I would say if you are Oregon, if you are Washington, and yeah, you're not going to have as much money as you would in the Big Ten, but you got a chance to win. And that creates money. That creates excitement. You have boosters. You have these places are wealthy. You can make up for it, especially if you're winning. What did we talk about with Oregon? What's the big deal? Can they still be able to go out and get like a Dante Moore five-star quarterback from Detroit to come play there, even though the Pac-12 isn't what it was? Well, yeah, if you still have access to the playoff. Gonzaga basketball recruits a lottery pick every year because they have access to the Final Four and they're not anywhere near a big time league. So all kids really want is, do you have all the stuff, the coach can get me the league? And yeah, I'm not going somewhere I can't play for the title, at least conceptually, but now you've got a real chance. And the more you win, the more money there is. There were schools that took more money in this realignment over the last couple of decades that have suffered greatly, even though they have more money. Boston College used to have a really viable athletic department. They had a really good basketball program that would make Sweet 16s and Final Eights. They'd have played big games. Their football team often was good. They'd win a lot of games. They're completely irrelevant now. They have more money in the ACC. And maybe they had to do it, but nobody is sitting there growing up as a big BC fan. Syracuse football, right? Rutgers. We talk about Pitt and West Virginia, these big games they used to play. It's not always better with more money. It's better for your AD, but it's not better for you, the fan. You want a chance to win. If you've got that, you have that chance. I totally agree. This takes the Big 12 Pac-12 merger off the table. Be crazy to want the other teams. Why get in the way? Big 12 is going to be fantastic. With 12 very even schools playing each other. Somebody may emerge, but it is going to be a real battle where you have a real chance to sell something. And I don't know that that's not better if you're, say, Iowa State and you can sell, hey, look, man, we make the playoffs every once in a while. We're in playoff contention.
Yeah.
Why are you going to Iowa, which never is? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say Iowa never is, but you know what I mean, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Can you sell the excitement of those late season games? And then one more quick point, Pat. On the flip, why would SEC, and this is I talked to some different people in the Big Ten particularly, we don't want any more teams. I don't need any more teams crowding in. It's going to be hard enough for us to make it. I need to add, yeah, okay, Notre Dame wants to come. That's good. We're going to do that. But if I'm the mid-level to low-level Big Ten team, I don't need more traffic in front of me. I need less. So what is my motivation? And it's not, oh, you can get 2 million more a year based on TV revenue by adding Oregon. Hell, I'm being given like 40, 50 more million a year in my budget. The hell am I going to do with that? I don't need a couple million more. What I need is a chance to win and sell out my stadium. So I think this thing really tamps down on it. I wish they had done it sooner. I've been arguing this for 15 years, but they didn't. But I think now is the thing. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, I mean, you do wonder if this had gotten done in February, are USC and UCLA still staying in the Pac-12? Maybe not, but it would have given them something else to think about. That's for sure. To me, it's an absolute game changer for those schools that, you know, look, Oregon and Washington belong in a Pacific Conference, okay? If you can stay there, if you can do that as opposed to dragging your teams all the way across the country to play in a league that makes no geographic sense, no traditional sense, and is harder competitively, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do that? If the money is so vastly different, okay, you have to consider it. But everything about it. If you for once want to do what the fans, what's best for the fans, what the fans want. If you want a chance to win games, to create a power program, as opposed to, well, yeah, we can go to the Big Ten and, you know, probably go 7-5, 8-4 and play Illinois and Minnesota. I mean, how exciting is that for Oregon and for Washington? Stay where you are. Try to dominate that league. And yeah, to Ross's point, if you're this should much lessen the interest in a lateral move, basically from Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah to the Big 12. It gives every league a chance, I think, to absolutely maximize what they have and keep this thing from going completely off the rails into a power two AFC NFC with satellite leagues.
Yeah, and what about the teams we talk about in the ACC who are stuck in that long-term deal and, oh, you know, this team and this team and that team want to get to the SEC, want to get to the Big Ten. Why would you do that now? I mean, especially in the ACC, like if your goal is to get to win championships and advance to some kind of football postseason, you need to stay in the ACC where there's only really been one power in the last 8 years. And as we saw last night, that power seems to be a little weakened from what it was just a few years ago. So, this is it. Look, this whole thing is great. Like, everybody should be excited about this. It's wonderful. It's awesome. The only thing is it should have happened like a long time ago. And there's only really one flaw, which we talked about last week, in which Dan, I'm sure, we'll address here in a minute, that has to do with the Bulls.
Yeah, I'll get to that. Let me bring up Notre Dame.
Yep. Yep.
To me, this assures Notre Dame going nowhere.
Yep.
Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick helped write this thing. Yep. And there's a lot of people don't like Notre Dame, and they don't like maybe that Jack Swarbrick has this power, but I've never heard this. Jack Swarbrick is not a smart man.
Yep.
Never heard that one. Yep. Never heard that one.
Nope.
Nope.
They aren't going anywhere. If they're good, they're in the playoff. They're in the playoff almost every year under the Brian Kelly standards now. Brian Kelly is a gold mine for Notre Dame. Notre Dame fans hate Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly got your program to the level that made them have the power right now that they are set up forever. And I know he's not a popular guy in South Bend, but he should be. Because what he did was remind everyone that Notre Dame can be good. And if they only lose one game a year, they're in the playoff, they're undefeated, or even with one loss, they are probably hosting. Huge for Notre Dame as a university, as a football program, at South Bend, Indiana, all those things. There is no reason for Notre Dame to go anywhere. Presuming an NBC deal comes in at a nice rate, which the way money's getting flowing around, you would expect it. And the amount that they just spent to get the third tier Big Ten game each week, Notre Dame is going to have the money. They're going to have been close enough in revenue that they can make it up easy with all their alums and all their other options. They have access to the playoff. They have access to recruits. They have the whole thing. They have a great setup with the ACC. Now, I've heard, will the Big Ten get together and say, none of our teams will play you or something like that? Okay. They play USC every year. USC doesn't want any part of that, by the way. But they've got five ACC games, Stanford and Navy every year, and they play USC every year.
Yep.
That's their conference.
Yeah.
They have a conference. That's eight games a year. Then they play four more. They'll get games because whenever Notre Dame comes to town, it's the biggest damn thing.
Yeah.
And it just is. And so everybody wants to play them. They are not joining a league. The Big Ten isn't doing that. Even if they did, okay, we don't need to play you guys. But you saw the scene. This is Ohio State. This is not some fledgling little operation. Irish are coming to town. People were excited for years.
Yes.
And created this. It was one of the biggest games, and only probably the only thing bigger is the 1-2 Michigan game when like Bo Schembechler died the night before. Like, I mean, it's Ohio Stadium, and the place was like out of control.
Yeah.
So I say Notre Dame's going zero places, and that also bodes well for, I think, a calmness to settle over the sport, which I think everybody wants.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, stability.
Yeah.
Stability. That's a good term.
Jack Swarbrick's 68 years old. He's, you know, he's got a lot of energy. He's probably, you know, could do this for quite a while longer. But if he chooses to retire at some point, and his legacy is, I kept Notre Dame true to Notre Dame as an independent team. We reestablished quality football. And as an ancillary benefit, we might have just stopped the complete ruination via realignment of the entire sport. That's a pretty good legacy. That'd be pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Yeah. You got to remember, before Brian Kelly got hired, it was all, Notre Dame will never be good again.
Oh, yeah.
I believe Sports Illustrated had stories like that. They'll never be good again. They can never compete. Brian Kelly got them to compete at a very high level. They're a good program. They're not top four, but they're top 10. And now, can Marcus Freeman take them next? Can anybody? I don't know. But they are, their independence is secure as far as I can see. There is no motivation to jump up. And when they get in that playoff and they get a share of the playoff revenue, they ain't splitting it.
Yep.
No, they're not.
That's right. That's right. And speaking of legacies for commissioners, you know, the working group that came up with this, that spent basically 2 years at creating this proposal, there's three of four guys on that group, and maybe all four, that this will be like the biggest part of their, this will be the biggest thing of their legacy. I mean, Bob Bowlesby, who's now retired, he retired going out with this. And Swarbrick, as you guys mentioned, and Craig Thompson, who himself is, you know, probably, I think, in his mid-60s, I would assume, and probably not long before you would think that he will go the way that Bob did, the Mountain West commissioner. And then, of course, Greg Sankey's the fourth one on there. I mean, he'll have a lot of other things probably because he's not to that age yet, but he'll probably have another thing on his legacy over the next 5 to 10 years. But it's a proposal that, you know, these guys worked on for 2 years in complete secrecy, and then it dragged out 15 more months. But lo and behold, it passes, and it's a legacy type of thing for them.
Yeah, they
huge. Let me just say, for Thompson, that guy's fought for 20 years to save that league, to save the Mountain West. He saved it.
Yep.
He has been relentless, and part, you know, much of that was, obviously, for selfish reasons, they needed bigger. You know, back then they had TCU and Utah. They had an undefeated Utah team with Urban Meyer and Alex Smith, right? And they're fighting for access. He fought and fought and fought and fought and fought and won. So tremendous job by Craig Thompson on that.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a tough job being a commissioner of one of those level leagues as this realignment thing has played out. But also some props here to Sankey, who helped drive this thing forward, was incredibly frustrated when it was roadblocked, threatened to take the 12-team format off the table and say the SEC won't support that. We'll go with four. We'll stay with four. Maybe we'll go with eight. That's only going to benefit us. But then at the end, it's like, okay, we're going to do this. And guess what? It's going to be good for everybody. It's not just going to be good for us. And one thing we have not seen very much in college athletics is, let's do something that's good for everybody. Mostly it's all just, let's take care of ourselves. And the SEC has certainly done that when it added Texas and Oklahoma. But I thought this was a move for the betterment of the whole college athletic enterprise. And the SEC was on board with it, even though they will not be the biggest beneficiary from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He gets credit for that.
Absolutely. And he did. He suggested, I think he was so frustrated and angry over the spring and summer that a few times publicly, right, he suggested that, maybe he might not compromise like he did last year. And maybe, you know, we'll take the 12 team off the table, and maybe it'll have to be just eight at large or just stay at four. And I ran into him on the field before the LSU game in New Orleans, before LSU played Florida State. And I asked him that. I asked him, like, why did you kind of have a change of heart, and why did you decide to compromise? And, you know, he made clear that him and Mississippi State President Mark Keenum, the chair of the Board of Presidents, discussed, you know, discussed not compromising, like discussed, as he kind of put it, letting everybody twist in the wind, kind of like they, like we twisted in the wind, referring to the group, you know, the eight that were for the playoff. And ultimately, he decided that, you know, that it would be betterment of college football to compromise. But also, as Pat mentioned, this is good for the SEC, too. I mean, the SEC, once every 4 years, is going to get half of, you know, in the four-team format, once every 4 years, they get basically two teams in. In the 12-team format, you know, once every 4 years, they're probably going to get four teams in, I would think, you know, and then in a normal year, they're going to get three. So this is obviously good for the league as well.
Yeah, it's good. And it's also good for, there's, I think, first off, all of college sports needs to be happy that the commissioners were in, there were petty feuds, it was everything that drove us all crazy about this. Nobody was in charge. And finally, the president of all people came in and like snapped everyone to attention and said, do this. And I think part of it is because if you're Mississippi State, yeah, you're in the SEC, but you don't have a prayer. Now you got a prayer.
Yeah, sure.
You're not winning the SEC. You never win the SEC.
No.
But let us in and see what happens.
Yeah.
They just won the baseball championship because they had a chance. You don't have to be number one all the way, but hey, some of those years they would have got in. When they had Dak Prescott, they would have got in, yep. Right? Probably.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They would have probably hosted a game. In fact, Keenum, who happens to be the Mississippi State president, right? He mentioned that in a radio interview he did over the weekend. He mentioned in 2014, you know, State was ranked number one, and they finished the season on a slide. You know, I think they lost their last three games, including a bowl.
The Egg Bowl, yeah. I think. Yeah.
They lost their last two, though, I want to say, in the regular season. But at 10-2, they were probably ranked around, like, in between eight and 10 or so. So they would have been the borderline of getting – they certainly would have got in, yeah. But he even mentioned would have maybe even hosted a game. And then that year as well, you guys remember Ole Miss was number one for a while, I believe, that year. And they would have probably gotten in too. So for the mid to bottom of the SEC, for the mid to bottom of the Big Ten, this is huge. I mean, plain and simple, it's huge for everybody. In like, you know,
I don't think Ole Miss ever got to number one, which is something Mississippi State, but I may forget. I did cover that Egg Bowl though. It was a great scene.
Yeah.
What I would, if you host, and this will get to our next point. If Mississippi State or Mississippi hosts a playoff game, it's the biggest sporting event in the history of Mississippi.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
It's huge.
I don't think it's, I don't think it's even close. Right.
Yeah. Hey, Ole Miss would have hosted in 2020, right? I might be getting my years confused here. Sometime.
They would have hosted recently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even last year, what were they, nine?
Last year would have been, they'd have been close. Yeah, last year would have been close, probably. Yeah, they're 9-3 or something, maybe. Right. Yeah, they would have been.
Yeah.
If you're a 2 or 3 loss SEC team, you're gonna be in, probably, almost certainly you're gonna be in. And then, you know, you're gonna be at 2 losses, you're gonna be pretty close to hosting, you would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why games will continue to matter. Hosting will be a huge thing. There are 3 breaks in this, right? Get in. Get top 8, get top 4. And so there's all sorts of drama on this. And right now there's almost no benefit to being one or two. Because, I mean, I guess you had Cincinnati any better than Michigan last year. I don't know. But, like, generally, you have to play it. You get to number one. Congratulations. Your reward is nothing.
Yeah, right.
You're on a neutral site against another team that's really good. Getting one and saying, hey, we're going to play the 8 team, and being 4 and you got to play number 5 on a neutral site's a big difference. Getting a home game is a big difference. So go ahead, Pat, on home games, on the value of the home game, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for places like Mississippi, you know, Ole Miss, Waco, Baylor, you know, Oklahoma State. Are you kidding? You get a playoff game in your stadium, total showcase. It's the biggest thing to hit that town that's ever happened, and it's just it's such an energy force. It's a recruiting force. It's an academic recruiting force. You just have so much going for you right then and there to be able to sell yourself and to have all these people come to your small college town who otherwise might not.
Yeah.
It's just a huge opportunity.
millions and millions of dollars.
Well, just look at last year. You know, it gets me excited just looking at the last several years and what playoffs would have looked like. I mean, that kind of thing is really exciting to me. And I think you would look at, you know, if you look at the AP poll, I'm just using the AP poll, after the championship games, yeah. Right? You know, 5 Notre Dame hosts 12 BYU. Really, really fun, cool game, right? That's an interesting game, too, from religious perspectives as well.
It's actually a little different because Georgia would not have
That's right. A bye. Yeah. I'm not even.
I'll give it to you.
Give it to me, yeah, because I forgot about AQs.
Georgia host Pitt would have been 5-12. Notre Dame would be 6. They would host Utah. Is that right? 7 would be Ohio State would host Michigan State.
Yeah.
Winner plays at Michigan. They're not. That's the problem. They've not gone. Okay. Baylor would play. I think I screwed this up. I got it messed up somehow. Ohio State would play Michigan State. And then where's... All right, I got too many teams. Oh, wait. Oh, Baylor would have moved up. Ole Miss would have hosted. Yeah,
Baylor's like the 4th seed.
Right, probably. That was it. Yes.
Because Baylor would move up. Yeah, right. So Baylor goes all the way to a bye.
Yeah.
Anyway, these are a gazillion dollars to these things. I mean, we did this a long time ago on these stories and death to the BCS, but they would brag about how much economic impact it'd be in Glendale, Arizona. And I'd be like, why is anyone in Ohio excited about this? Right. If I'm the governor of Ohio, I'm like, wait, what happened?
How about economic impact in Oxford, Mississippi?
Columbus.
Right? Yeah.
What if we host 2 of these games? Mm-hmm. What if we host 3?
Yeah.
Like when they're eventually going to get it. So why are we doing second round on neutral site? Okay. So I did talk to a bunch of people, and the feeling is their coaches are so control freaked. They'd rather play every game neutral site. One guy said, my coach would play every game neutral site, never wants to go on the road.
They would take a neutral site game over the risk
potentially
of
hosting a game.
Potentially hosting a game, yeah.
The risk of going to Alabama and playing at Alabama or at Ohio State in the snow, or they would rather just play them all neutral like basketball. You know, like Kentucky almost never plays on the road anymore. They just play these neutral site games because Calipari is like, it's better for recruiting. I don't get, you know. And he's not wrong.
Yeah.
He's just, it's not very exciting. It's
not very fun for his fans, but why do they matter?
It's not very fun for his fans. And it's not very fun for the sport when you go, boy, I'd rather you have a home and home with Duke. That would be freaking awesome. Yeah. Instead, it's like, we'll play him at the Barclays Center. Mm-hmm. Right. But that's how they look at it. So these guys are like, screw it. We'll just take neutral sites all the time. I don't want to play home games. Some sports in college athletics are like that, right? Basketball is one, the entire tournament, the conference tournaments, everything's neutral site. But baseball has them on campus till the finals.
Yeah.
Yep.
Women's basketball has some. You know, I prefer the home game all the way. So that's part of it. Now, I think there's two things. One, the excitement of the first round is going to be so big, and the benefit you're going to get hosting that first game, the other schools are going to say, why not us?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's one wrinkle you could do to change the mentality of the coaches right now. Allow home playoff teams to host recruits.
Right? Oh.
They are obsessed with recruits, right? Kirby Smart wants to end the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville against Florida because he can't host recruits at it. Because if you're off campus, you can't host recruits, or even if you are hosting, I'm not sure what the arcane rule is. It's not the same because you're not on campus, right? If you let 5 through 8 host recruits, this thing will go boom, bulls are out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, I don't even know if they oppose this or don't. I'm not saying, but every coach's head will blow. Nick Saban complains when, like, the open visitation period started today and I got to play a national championship game. This is putting us behind, right? You know? It's like,
yep.
I guess winning the title will probably make up for that. That would be it. But right now, that is more it than the cronyism of the Bulls.
Okay.
But they're entrenched, but they're living off coach fear, I think.
Yeah.
That's my theory. Anyone else can call me to tell me my theory is wrong. the ADs. But that's what I've been hearing is basically our coach, the best line. Our coach play every game neutral site. They never want to go on the road.
That's so classic. And you see it in the scheduling, right? I mean, if schools can schedule 8 home games, they will.
Yeah.
In basketball, if they can schedule 20 home games, they will, you know?
All right. Jim Boeheim's made his entire, like, it just sits up in Syracuse for the first 2 months. Maybe he goes down to MSG for one game.
Right.
Yeah. Because he wants some good food, gets down to New York, and that's it. Oh, that, what, road game? What is this?
The guy's
got 1,000 wins. He's smart. Don't tell me he's not smart.
Dan, okay. I have finally found it. I found it. I know last year after the championship games, I had reconstructed the bracket and how it would look. So, yeah, like number 5 seed Georgia would host Pitt. Number 8 seed Ole Miss would host Oklahoma State, which would be awesome. Number 7 Ohio State would host 10 Michigan State, like you mentioned. Number 6 Notre Dame host 11 Utah, which also really interesting matchup. So, and then the top 4 would be 1 Alabama, 2 Michigan, 3 Cincinnati, and 4 Baylor. So I just thought.
And we would have gotten home playoff games at Between the Hedges, under the Golden Dome, at the Horseshoe, and the Grove.
In the Grove, baby.
Yeah, that wouldn't be any good. That wouldn't be any good. Much rather have those teams playing without their best players in, you know, the Peach Bowl.
What about the sanctity of the Alamo Bowl?
The thing to watch, Dan, you're not going to want to know this, right? The thing to watch to really keep an eye on is you're going to have mid-level to maybe upper-tier bowls that aren't, you know, the CFP bowls. They are going to fight to try to get the first round games. And it'll be interesting to watch. And it's something that came up late last fall in negotiations in the room. And you're gonna have a fight with the, even one of the commissioners mentioned to me recently. Watch what he just, I don't know why he used the Music City Bowl, but he did. He said, watch how many calls we'll get from the Music City Bowl. You know, we want to host a first round game sort of thing. So keep an eye on Gator Bowl, all those tier, Alamo Bowl. What else would be in that mix?
It'd be a disaster. Yeah. It'd just be the stupidest thing ever, and just don't do it. No. I mean, come on.
You're adding travel and expense for your fans and your team. Don't do it.
Yeah. Don't do it. It's just stupid. It's stupid. You're about to break free. This is your chance. That weekend right there. We're going live from Notre Dame over to Ohio State under the lights. I mean, come on. This is going to be such a great weekend of football. The other bowls will continue. These bowls, I've said all along, you want to close your bowl down? I'll buy it. No one's ever taken me up on this offer. They can't lose money. They're welfare bowls. They exist because the conferences share revenue and pay all the expenses. You charge for tickets you can't sell. You charge the band to perform. You charge overpriced hotel rooms for the teams to stay in. They all make money.
Yeah.
They don't pay taxes somehow. They're unbelievable business deals. They're all 501c3s. It's just ridiculous. And guess what? You still get 2.5 million people to watch the New Mexico Bowl.
Yes, you do.
Because they want to gamble. There's no game. If there's one game on, you're going to get a rating.
Yeah.
And sports wagering is increasing. Your bowl industry will be fine. I don't care about you anyway.
I did that.
They used to have like an NFL. It's like trying to fight for the sanctity of the 4th NFL preseason game. We lost the game. Like, is anyone crying about that? Anyway, this is going to be great. That is going to be a small thing, but it will go away by the next one.
Yeah.
I guess they'll be hard to beat the semis. I think they'll always be playing the Rose Bowl. Which is fine.
That's fine. That's fine.
But, man, is it going to be fun watching those games? And these coaches are going to go, they're showcasing their home stadium to a 10 million, 15 million person audience. These playoff games will get big. Because they will be exclusive.
And finally, some of these northern, the Big Ten schools have seen the light, you know. And there was a clause put in, and it was a compromise last fall from commissioners where if you're the hot, you know, the better seeded team gets to decide in the first round if they want to be home or if they want to go to some neutral site. And that was put in there because Kevin Warren in the room argued for his northern kind of cold weather type schools to be able to move their game indoors, their first round game indoors. And a lot of that was Gene Smith had come out and said, we don't want to play when it's like 20 degrees out here. We want to move like indoors. And now I see Gene Smith and maybe even some other Big Ten ADs have come out and said, wait, whoa. Actually, we are going to host these games. Yeah, don't get rid of that home field advantage, no matter if it's 20 degrees. I thought that was kind of silly always. And a lot of other commissioners, I think, in the room during negotiations last fall thought it was kind of silly that these stadiums weren't weatherized in that they were that was being used to delay things. And now we're seeing, you know, that really wasn't a real thing. And nobody's going to eschew the, you know, a home field advantage.
I thought that was such an absurd argument. It just didn't make sense to me.
they went with what they were told, I swear. Like, there was a guy, Harvey Perlman, who was the chancellor at Nebraska.
Yep.
Obviously, very smart guy, right? And he had these quotes about how, you know, we can't do this to the bowl industry. And then he had this quote, and I'm gonna get it a little wrong. He said, nobody would want to play a playoff game in Lincoln, Nebraska. That was his saying. And he said it, and we wrote a whole chapter. We ripped the crap out of him, like, repeatedly. So much so, I had a book signing at Nebraska's bookstore on a game day in Lincoln. And Harvey Perlman, to his credit, showed up at the book signing at the bookstore to basically confront me and yell at me and argue with me over this. But his line was, nobody wants, I'm like, everybody would want this. Yes. Yeah. Every Nebraska fan would want this.
Yeah, you tell your fans, hey, would you rather play here or do you want to travel halfway across the country to Arizona and spend a fortune and do it there? Like, are you kidding me?
No, yeah, you get the advantage of the cold weather, the home. Nebraska sucks. Their football and game day environment is unbelievably awesome. Yeah. Like, nobody, I bet your hoteler would like it. I bet all the people in Lincoln would like it. I bet everything, right? But he did show up. And then to his credit, he comes to basically yell at me. And we have a discussion at the book signing. And then, to his credit, he bought a book.
Cha-ching.
And I love Harvey Perlman for that. He bought a damn book.
You'll take getting yelled at if it means a sale, right?
Hey, yell at me all you want, man. I'm trying to put my kids through college. Thank you. No, it was hysterical. He shows up. He's like, I'm Harvey Perlman. You ripped me in this chapter 8. Everyone gets ripped, Harvey, man. Don't say Nebraska. Look at that. We got, it was pretty funny. Anyway, he did buy a book. So that to me meant more. Harvey's all right in my book. It was he had a terrible opinion on this. I just didn't make any sense. But that used to be the mentality. Why would anyone want to play up here? We should play down in Florida. Like, what?
Yeah.
How about all your fans going, this is great? How about the caterer? How about the dude who's got a house nearby and parking, you know, and I can charge $100 a car now? It's a playoff game.
Yeah.
Biggest thing to ever happen in Nebraska, be a Cornhusker playoff game. Anyway, we're on our way, and I just think this is going to be the underlying, the next few years, it's really going to go down as pre-expanded playoff and post-expanded playoff.
Right, yeah.
And there's so many changes. And one other, because this is gone. Oh, go ahead, Pat.
No, one other thing that's going to be a change out of this, if Jim Harbaugh gets his way, and I hope he does because it makes sense, yes. Revenue sharing for the players.
Yep.
You've just found this new geyser of money. Let's direct some. Let's have a postseason share just like there is in pro sports. You make the postseason, the players get a share. They get a bonus, right? They get some of the money. You do this, it takes a little bit of pressure off of your boosters and your AD and everybody else to come up with the NIL and collective money if your team's making the playoff. Conceivably, theoretically, right? And secondly, it's simply fair, okay? You're bringing in all this new money. How about let the players have a little bit of it? You don't have to give them all of it. They certainly would never do that. But they get a chance to get it, and also your Olympic sports get a little chance to get it too. If it trickles down that far, if you resist giving a $2 million a year raise to your coach and 6 more years on his contract and a 43rd analyst maybe the Olympic sports can also get some of this money too.
You want to pay the Olympic sports now? As of now, we're going to get into that. You're going to pay the Olympic sports.
Yeah. No, we're going to simply help them survive, Dan. We're going to simply help them fund scholarships.
Oh, you don't want to pay the Olympic sport athletes?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No.
Good
no.
Lord.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying help them survive so we don't have to listen.
Knockout, drag out right here. We'll get to that.
So we don't have to listen to the athletic director say, well, we're spread so, thin.
Michigan State, bring your damn swimming program back and, you know. Yeah.
Would you?
You got enough money now for your swim? Can you fill the pool with water?
$9.5 million for the head coach.
Yeah. But can't fix the pool.
They're going to make more.
The revenue sharing is a big piece. And it was asked, you know, Bill Hancock was asked about it. And he actually, to his credit, he opened up and said, you know, we've had serious discussions about that in the room. And I think on the conference level, there has been a lot of discussions about that happening. And it does feel like we're inching closer. I think college, this is a whole other discussion, but really quickly, I think college football is trying to figure out how to get ahead of revenue sharing and athlete employment before they get behind it like they did NIL.
I'm willing to change as this goes on and we see, but I am not all in favor of that. I think when you offer the opportunity of this stage to make money for these athletes through their NIL, now that you are no longer telling them they can't make money, that to me is enough on an ethical basis. You don't necessarily have to pay the players this. And I am a staunch, decades-long proponent of player rights and compensation. But this is a Pandora's box that I don't know will actually help the football players that much because they're going to go down Pat's route. And every single Olympic sport athlete is going to end up with an equal share somehow.
That's not my route.
But whatever. Once you open that, and most of those Olympic sport athletes come from upper middle class families who spent hundreds of thousands of dollars chasing travel sports and all that stuff.
Stereotyping.
They don't necessarily need. I am fine. What did he say?
Stereotyping.
This is the best pod yet. I want to stereotype. I like this knockout drag out, baby.
We're just getting started. There you go. Just getting started. All right. Let's get to knockout, dragout. Playoff. This is going to go long today. Whatever. They dropped the damn. Couldn't have done this in June. Our ratings could have used some help. No. Goddamn hate these people. What the hell?
It was supposed to come in the summer of 2020. Blame the pandemic.
They had so many chances to drop this at an opportune time for the podcast. Instead, they did it when
they did.
Think
of us. Think of us, your humble college football inquirer. All right. Knockout, drag out. How long's Brian Kelly got before firedbriankelly.com really starts? Ross, you were there.
Yes, just a mess. I mean, you know, the ending kind of took away from just how much of a mess LSU looked in that football game. And yes, you know, Florida State did a lot of great things, but I don't know that anybody thinks that Florida State is at the end of the year going to be a 10-2 or 11-1 team or something. Maybe they will. I guess we'll see in about 3 months. But I think LSU is just a mess from its offensive line play, which was a disaster. They couldn't run block. They couldn't pass block. Jane Daniels had a takeoff running, you know, multiple times. I mean, it seemed like every time he dropped back, and sometimes he had the happy feet, but most of the time he was running from somebody who was about to maul him. So the offense looked terrible. You know, they're maybe the best receiver in the nation, Kayshon Boutte. I don't exactly know what's going on with him. You know, he just looked a little uninspired. He dropped two or three passes, a couple in the end zone. And then, you know, LSU special teams was a disaster, obviously. Two muffed punts, field goal block, an extra point block, and everything the coaches did. And credit Brian Kelly, right? He stood at the podium after the game, and I was right there in front of him. And he realizes, I think he's, you know, a smart man, and I think he realizes he makes a lot of money to win football games and not lose them like that. And he blamed himself and he blamed the coaching staff on poor decisions, specifically with special teams. You know, number one, picked the wrong punt returner. Number two, made a change to the left side of the line on the field goal team after the field goal block, and the extra point was blocked from the left side of the line. So obviously didn't do enough there. So it really was a disastrous performance, and they probably shouldn't have been even close to that game. And I think they were close for two reasons. One, LSU is still really talented and has really good players. And number two, Florida State probably you wouldn't think is going to be some world beater.
Well, and Florida State just absolutely at the end of the game said, we do not want to put this away. We want to give you another chance, LSU. Please, by all means, we will not take a knee three times and kick the field goal to go up two scores with less than 2 minutes to play. No, we're going to throw a pitch down here at the goal line, and we're going to drop it, and we're going to give you that chance, and then we're going to go into a ruinous prevent defense and just let you go bip, 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 bip right down the field and score the touchdown, and then we finally get it together and block the extra point. But, like, Mike Norvell has struggled there, and there are signs it's getting better, but if you go back to the way they lost to Jacksonville State last year with just incomprehensibly bad defense that gave up a bomb on the last play and lost to an FCS school, and then the way they tried to lose this game, holy moly, his in-game decision-making. It's like, you got to win the game. That's the only thing. Win the game. Don't worry, we got to score a touchdown. We got to make a statement here. No, you win the game. Take a knee three times. Kick the field goal. Take a 10-point lead. It's over. So, I mean, for all of the LSU dysfunction, and there was a lot of that, what FSU did to try to lose the game overshadowed an otherwise pretty exciting opener for them.
Well, it was a lot of fun to watch if you were just watching. If you were one of these two teams, it was like a win and a loss and a loss and a win. And, yeah, I agree. Lot made of Brian Kelly. They're going to be fine. Brian, I maintain my faith that Brian Kelly knows how to coach football based on his entire career. but he is in a different spot, and games happen. So I'm not going to write him off on year one.
No. I will. Game one of year one. I will say, and Ross knows this, like, LSU fans – will wheel on you as fast as any in the country. And so they may not say fire him, but boy, they're going to come blazing. Well,
they'll say
it
soon. Yeah. They did their guy Coach O dirty. I mean, you can't be more Louisiana than Coach O.
They nuked Coach O. I'll never forget being down there for a Kentucky football game in the late 90s and Hal Mumme, and Kentucky was pretty good. Tim Couch was a quarterback, and they won like 37-35. And listening to the post-game call-in, it was the most vicious post-game call-in I'd ever heard. I mean, just one caller after another, just ripping the hell out of LSU. It was like, whoa.
And it didn't take long.
I don't like that stuff.
It didn't take long. As you mentioned, game one of season one for LSU fans to turn right and start talking about Billy Napier. In the coaching cycle last year, it was very quick. And obviously, Billy had this huge win against Utah, and Brian Kelly had this awful loss where they looked miserable. And immediately it turned to that, because though, if those listening don't know, you know, Billy Napier, I think it can be described as he was very interested in the LSU job, and he was about an hour away at Lafayette and had a lot of success there. And LSU did not interview him, kind of let him go and leave the state. So that will be a comparison. We'll see. This won't be the last time of that.
They went big game hunting on that. Yeah, it's going to be good. All right. Also, upset fan base, Clemson. They win 41-10 over Georgia Tech, but it was 14-3 at the half and kind of deep into the 14-10 deep into the second quarter.
Third quarter.
Yeah. And Georgia, no one thinks Georgia Tech's good, including Georgia Tech. the issue, DJ Uiagalelei, not great at all early, to put it nicely. I thought when he made the little, he was basically in the grasp and he made the little shovel pass to Will Shipley, which was a dangerous play on a third down. Shipley ran for the first. He kind of got into a groove and then things really opened up. That kind of broke Georgia Tech's back. But late in the game, Cade Klubnik comes in, five-star recruit, top 10 quarterback out of Texas, another kid from Austin. So many good quarterbacks in Austin. It's crazy. He comes in, and look, it's a tired Georgia Tech team, but you can see some zip on this ball. And we got a quarterback controversy, I guess. I don't think William Christopher is going to do a whole lot of movement, but he has had this in the past when Deshaun Watson came along, and when Trevor Lawrence came along, he famously is gone with the talented player. Obviously made two good choices on that. They've got a couple games. They got Furman and some, you know, some easy games, but then they have a Wake Forest, NC State back to back starting in a couple weeks. So I think we're going to see a lot of Cade, and we're going to get our chance. I don't know. What thoughts on the QB Derby there in Clemson, if there is one, Pat?
Oh, there is one. The fans absolutely think there's one. We'll see how long it takes Dabo to acknowledge that there is one. He did give way to Trevor Lawrence over Kelly Bryant when Trevor was a freshman. It took a few games, you know, and Dabo was a little bit stubborn there. DJ is popular. He's a really nice young man. He was not good last year. He was incrementally better than that against Georgia Tech, but not a lot, I didn't think. I didn't see some dramatic transformation. He ran it a little bit more with more authority. Like, you know, he sought contact and won some contact, which he was a bad runner last year. He did make a couple of nice plays, but also two of those scoring drives, one was 5 yards and one was 15. They blocked punts. I mean, Clemson's special teams were lights out. Their defense is lights out. So, yeah, I'm not sure you need a great quarterback to win the ACC. You could stick with DJ Uiagalelei and win a lot of games. But what Klubnik showed when he got his chance, wow, that ball popped out of the hand. He was fast in his movements and his decision-making. He threw downfield. You know, they made some bigger plays. And, yeah, it's the end of the game. It's a little bit garbage time. But, boy, did the fans – I mean, you heard the roars when he came in the game and then when he made those plays – from the Clemson fans there, they want to see a change. So this is going to be a very interesting situation for Dabo to manage. And he is stubborn. He doesn't like to be pushed into anything or told what to do. So he's not going to let fan sentiment decide this, but play on the field may decide it relatively soon.
Stubborn and loyal to his guys, right? Like he's been that, like he has always preached that like loyalty. And he did it again last night. I saw in the post game, like he is loyal to his guys, and it's going to take a lot for him to make that change if it does happen. I'll say this: as you mentioned, DJ did run the ball a lot better, and they seemed to use him more. That seemed to be part of the game plan, was using him more as a runner. Maybe we see that two quarterback thing, you know, where he is used as this runer more, and they bring in Klubnik to get him more down the field, but. I will say this, DJ's receivers at times really did not help him out. There were some misses as well. It reminded me of like some of the things in the LSU game where Jaden's receivers didn't help him out. So got to catch the ball if it's in your mitts. And there was a few that probably should have been caught. But they've got, 2 weeks to figure it out before they start kind of launching into a stretch of conference games.
Was Coach Sweeney loyal to Kelly Bryant?
He
leads them to the playoffs in 2017, leads them to the ACC championship game, and obviously made the right call. I'm not saying this, but 2018, for a couple weeks in, Trevor Lawrence is new starting QB, and Bryant had to transfer. It's a big soap opera. I don't think that Dabo is that. He's not dumb. So yeah, he's loyal, but like, I mean, he loved Kelly Bryant. Everyone loved Kelly Bryant. But if you got Trevor Lawrence, I mean, you better be playing him. And we don't know. Maybe this is the same situation. So I don't think it's gonna be I know he's kind of a stick in the mud and all that, but I think he also knows if you earn it, you're going to get this job. And Trevor Lawrence learned it, and it was a good call.
Yeah.
He went on to win the national title.
He gave Kelly Bryant 4 games and at least 3 starts, maybe 4 starts that in 2018.
It took a little bit.
I don't think it's going to happen this year.
It took the rock in the, he had to rock the old soda machine back and forth.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be this week, but I think he'll make the right call if that's the right call. He certainly, Kelly Bryant has a better track record than DJ Ungo.
Yeah.
So we'll see where we go with that. All right, look, this has gone long. We were going to get to some other things. We are going to have the race for the case later this week. We are going to talk a lot of Alabama, Texas in that game. We're going to talk Pitt and Tennessee, some of the games going into week 2. week one was, and the playoff thing just, you know, it's kind of jammed us up. Normally on the Tuesday show, we kind of preview the upcoming week, but we're going to get to more of that in the race of the case. But I do have one thing we need to discuss, and it does involve the Texas Longhorns. We have to do this People's Court. It's a very important People's Court. And it comes to us from JR the Rebel, who is a producer, I believe, on what is called Red Dirt Rebel Radio out of Lubbock. Okay? I'm getting this wrong. I've listened to a lot of country music up in Lubbock lately. He posted a picture on his Twitter that it really gave us an ethical dilemma. He has a picture from apparently a grocery store. There's a little kid in a grocery cart wearing a Texas Longhorn t-shirt and camo, looks like, what are those? Camo shorts. Yeah. Absolutely love this kid. Looks like he's got some dirt on his chin. Like, he's all right. Behind him is a case of Dr. Pepper. Hopefully not for him. They look like they're in the checkout line of a grocery store. And JR the Rebel takes a picture of this kid with his hand kind of in front of it doing the horns down. Horns down. And he says, never too early to let them know where you stand. And this kid has this priceless look. Go to at JR the Rebel. This kid's stunned. I don't even know what to describe. Kid, this whole thing.
Kid's like, why is this man doing this to me?
Yeah, what is this creepy? His dad appears to be behind him buying more Dr. Pepper. I don't know what he's doing back there. Anyway, this could all be staged. I don't know. But I have the ethical question for you two here in the People's Court.
All right.
Is it ethical to taunt an 18-month-old or whatever this kid is, 2.5 years old, something like that, in a shopping cart with his dad with the horns down? Is this hate speech? Is this a hate gesture? Or indeed does JR the Rebel have a point and it's never too early to let them know where you stand?
I have
Justice Ford.
Yeah, my biggest problem is with the case of Dr. Pepper. Like, what the hell is this guy doing? I mean, come on.
You can do better. Inspired by the commercials.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe it's a Fansville purchase. But no, look, I'm in favor of it. If the kid's going to wear the shirt, the kid's going to catch some flack. All right. Sorry.
That's look, right.
Kid, get ready. Get ready.
You made a choice, child.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. Or your parents made the choice for you, but you're going to have to live with that choice, kid. You got the horns on your shirt. People are throwing the horns down at you. I am okay with this microaggression.
Okay.
I am okay as well. But it is funny. I said yeah, you made the choice, child, but you're right. The parents probably made the choice. So, child, at some point when he's older, he can blame his parents. But if you're a parent and you put that on your child and you have them wear team gear, you got to prepare for stuff like that. So it's okay. It's never too early. I agree with old JR.
I mean, if the kid didn't want to get the horns down, he would have got himself born into a Red Raber family.
That's right. His fault.
Especially in Lubbock, especially as you leave for the SEC. No mercy.
That's right.
You could have no mercy. Right. Because you know what this little kid's going to grow up to? Big kid.
That's right.
He's going to be a big Texas Longhorn fan. So you got to put him in his place every time. And if this kid's traumatized by, like, my childhood, they just kept flashing this weird symbol at me, and, like, middle-aged radio producers are mad at me from Red Dirt Radio. I think we have a unanimous decision here.
We do. Sorry about your therapy, kid.
JR the Rebel, you are okay in our book. It was proper use. He's also known, his bio on Twitter is Beard Grower. And used cat owner.
Used cat? I don't even want to know. I don't want an explanation on that.
Do not. Thank you.
Never too early to let them know where you stand. Horns down! All right, we'll talk it up on the race for the case, so check us out on that one. Thanks for the handling through the long pod. Talk to you later.